be really lovely to, if not kind of give that task to someone whose job it is, who's got the kind of content and all of the information ready, but at least to share that and feel like you've got an ally and backup, I think would just be so lovely to have like a mascot for designers that like really believes in what you're doing and is there to improve your outputs through the structure and remove barriers. Hello, you've reached Hotline Design Podcast. How may we help you? And welcome back to Hotline Design Podcast. In this week's episode, we're talking all about the new and exciting world of design ops. What is it? How it emerged? And what we can learn from design ops? Just as a caveat, we are students of life, continuous learning. So we are very new to the realm of design ops. So this is a bit of an exploratory episode, and we can't wait to have you along for our learning journey. So ladies, I have to know, how have your weeks been?
Hello, hello. Thank you for asking, Lauren. So had a really good week at work. We're kind of putting a bow on my current project and ready to deliver it mid-October, which I think by the time this podcast airs, it will be live. Can't tell you what it is, though. And in my personal life in Manchester, it has been quite sunny this weekend. So we profited off the sun and went on a little walk in the Peak District, and it was really, really lovely. We haven't done that in quite a while, and we keep talking about maybe we should go on a walk this weekend. It keeps raining. But this time we actually did it, and it was really sunny in Manchester, but we went to the peaks, and it was actually cloudy and rain from time to time. So, yeah, it happened anyway. But one funny thing that happened was this walk wasn't very well, like, what is it called? Signaled?
Signaled.
Signposted?
Yes, that's the word.
Consulting terms.
Yes. So that, yeah, the walk wasn't very well signposted, and we ended up in this field with a bull, a cow. Are both of them cows? You see, I don't know my English words today. Basically, there was a bull, a cow, and a calf. And we were actually terrified because the bull was right in front of the gate that would take us out of that field.
Oh, no.
And we kind of like had to go around and go over this like fence with spikes because we were really scared. Initially, I wasn't scared at all. I thought, oh, little beautiful cows, like they're not going to do anything. But for some reason, my partner was a bit like, oh, this is a bull. Maybe we shouldn't go in front of it, which I'm glad he was there because I would have just been like, oh, here's the gate. Let's go.
Yeah. You're like, no, 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 Mr. Bull. I'm a vegan. It's fine. We see eye to eye.
Exactly. I care about your well-being. Tell me about your work-life balance. But yeah, so That was quite funny because when we went out of the field as well, my partner was like, you kept talking about your finances and how you managed ways to sort out it between your accounts. And in my head, I was like, right now we're going to die. And Lavinia's talking about finances. But yeah, he was trying to like protect me from his fear, I think, and only told me afterwards. But I was just like, oh yeah, it's all good. Let's go through the gate. But we didn't. So yeah, that was my week and my adventures. How about you guys?
I think it's going to be really hard to top that.
Yeah.
Oh.
I was actually going to say, like, you know that we're all based in the UK when we start talking about the weather every other, like, episode. Because there's nothing else to really obsess about.
Yeah.
But it sounds like such a nice weekend. And I'm very happy that you survived and are here with us today.
Thank you.
So, retweet.
Thank you.
Glad this is not a pod of two.
Actually, I would be super cautious. I really admire how, I want to say like, I don't want to say your lack of self-awareness because that sounds very rude.
No, I think that's actually true. Like, don't worry about it. My ignorance to bull behavior.
That's so much fun. Mine is so boring in comparison. I've basically been cleaning my house because I think it got to this point where I was just like, I cannot continue living in a sty. So I spent all of yesterday cleaning the house, and I feel a bit sad because it was actually so sunny and I hardly ventured out. But on the plus side, I have been, what have I been doing? I think reading or trying to read quite a few design books to get inspiration. And then also recently signed up to ADP List as mentor. Woohoo! For I guess our listeners who are not familiar with ADP List, it stands for Awesome Design People List. And it's basically a website where you can connect with designers all over the world to get informal mentorship. And it's totally free of charge. I think it's also amazing because, Lavinia, you're signed up as a mentor as well, aren't you?
Yeah.
So yeah, that's just kind of my update.
We just need to bribe Lauren now, so all of us are there.
I feel like I want to sign up for both of yours and be like, hello, I have so much to learn from you two.
So many hotline questions.
Long-time listener, first-time meeter.
Why don't you just go ahead and leave us a 5-star review without even speaking to us while you're at it?
100%. I will write to them and be like, please, can you put an extra star down there? 6 stars, because these two women transcend the 5-star review.
Thank you.
And how about you, Lauren? How was your week?
So, speaking of stars, I have completely lived my dream of seeing The Graham Norton Show, which is a UK talk show with this eccentric gay Irishman that like wears the most stunning and over-the-top blazers, and he interviews celebrities. He like has my dream job, which is, dressing to the nines and just getting to talk to kind of celebrities and drink wine and alcohol on like national television, which is like not a thing in Canada, but is a thing here. So yeah,
welcome
the guest stars.
UK.
Exactly. UK all day. The guest stars were Jodie Comer, Andy McDowell, Billy Porter, like from Pose, Daisy Haggard from Killing Eve. And the musical guest was Texas. And it was just so interesting to go to the BBC studios to see the behind the scenes, the number of lights that they have just like hanging from the ceiling. It was just amazing. And also to see like Graham Norton is like a one take wonder. This man, he's just like looking at his cue cards, drinking his wine, and then he's just on. And I was just like, this is a professional, a true seasoned veteran. So I loved every moment of it. And I'm not like the BBC, but tickets are free and you can just go to like GrahamNortonShow.com or something, BBC.com, and enter into the raffle. Not sponsored yet. Graham Norton, come on the pod.
Yeah. You know, Lauren, I don't think you're very far from Graham Norton. Like, you obviously already have the blazers. And the way you describe him reminds me of how some people kind of, when they talk to me about the pod, describe you. Because I remember some people were kind of like, oh, she's so witty. She, like, responds so quickly. Like, the transitions are great. So I think, you know, when he retires, you've got a good shot.
Girl,
100% agree.
Stop.
Yeah, I was gonna say that. You're killing it today, by the way. We're not even gonna have to. I'm lucky because I'm editing this episode and I'm not gonna have to cut very much out other than the explicit content.
My equipment is gonna short circuit because I'm sobbing at how nice these compliments are.
Always.
So much.
So now that we've given our week updates, it's time to move on to design ops, which is the core focus of today's episode. And you might think this is going to be somewhat boring compared to Lauren's Graham Norton update. So what exactly is design ops? It's a term that I've personally heard a lot about recently, especially at really big tech companies where there is quite a mature design practice and there is a lot of focus on optimizing design, or at least putting in processes in place to help designers get the most value out of their work. And we have a very handy definition here from the Nielsen Norman Group. Design ops refers to the orchestration and optimization of people, processes, and craft in order to amplify design's value and impact at scale. What does design ops mean to you?
Good question. So at least to me, I'm relatively new to the realm of design ops. And actually, the design ops I know in day-to-day life is this new group stood up in the company where we work. I would consider them friends of the pod, and they've started a new kind of design practice called design ops. But from this kind of like NNG perspective, really the way I boil it down is once an organization reaches a certain design maturity and they've stopped just, you know, having their designers like with their berets working alone in the corner, they're kind of thinking about how can we optimize design and support our designers and create a bit more of a cohesive structure and support system. And so they look at a variety of ways to kind of support the designers, to provide them with tools, and really to empower them to do their best work, like remove a lot of the blockers that you might have when the design maturity is low. So that's the way I've distilled it in my mind. How about you, Lavinia?
Yeah, I think 110% what you said. I definitely came to the pod as a newbie this time around. I think you caveated it at the start as well. We kind of read a lot about it and we're coming together to chat about things we read and putting it together. So we have a very similar understanding of what design ops from what I read as well. And when we said we're going to talk about design ops on the pod, the first place I went to was the Design Op Handbook by Envision. I knew of it, so I was like, okay, I'm gonna go skim it, make sure I kind of have a little bit of an understanding for the pod. And it's exactly what you said, making sure that designers are supported, possibly kind of have a framework for growth as well. And they're not just kind of, as you said, standing alone in the corner with their berets. And I think one of the things that stood out to me in the book, Dave Maloof kind of introduced design ops and he had a bit of an interesting perspective on how designers have been working over the past few decades in big tech companies and how they often had to adapt to the way that engineers work in tech companies and how that has been quite painful for many designers because obviously, engineers often develop something that has been defined. They know what they're working on. They pick up tickets that are kind of like well-structured. They work on specific things, whilst design work is often has a lot more unknowns, and we're more about defining what to do rather than doing it at times. Or it's like a 50-50. And sometimes those kind of like DevOps ways of working haven't really worked for designers. And that's kind of how design ops came to be. But that's kind of like my understanding, very much aligned with what you said, Lauren. What about you, Yusin?
Yeah, so I definitely agree with a lot of the things you both have mentioned. I actually read a quote. I need to find the source of it, but someone said that design ops is fundamentally everything except the actual doing of design work, because it's all about trying to set up processes, or I think being very intentional about how designers work and communicate with others in their teams, especially when designers are in cross-functional teams, so that the rest of the organization can actually see the value of design work and continue to buy into the value of design. I think there's an increasing awareness that design is not just, I think as we've discussed many times on this pod, about aesthetics, but also goes beyond into continuous user research, trying to uncover user problems and coming up with ideas that we can work on and experiment. And I think design ops is all about trying to support really that role of design as being a strategic enabler to business. I just used so many buzzwords in there, by the way.
I like that though. I think it absolutely made sense.
Please cut that.
Our business lady.
I just wanted to add something else on. Sometimes in different companies, there's a distinction between design ops as a role. I think in particularly the more mature design companies, there are people dedicated to looking after design ops and trying to promote those practices, those best practices in working with designers. And there is like design ops as an overall sort of approach and methodology. So I think it's quite an interesting distinction that I think design ops started out maybe as a methodology, but as more and more companies, especially high growth ones, have started to see the value that design ops can bring. They've even dedicated specific people to looking after these processes.
That would be so lovely to have, I feel like, design ops, someone in that position, like a design ops lead, because I feel like they would be committed to setting that structure, supporting the designers, but also, like, I think they could really help with the evangelizing design bit. And it would be really lovely to, if not kind of give that task to someone whose job it is, who's got the kind of content and all of the information ready, but at least to share that and feel like you've got an ally and backup, I think would just be so lovely to have, like, a mascot for designers that, like, really believes in what you're doing and is there to improve your outputs through the structure and remove barriers. Like, that's just a dream. I would love that.
Absolutely. One thing that this kind of, like, reminds me of is when I was reading the operations handbook, Dave Malouf was kind of describing himself as someone who is more in love with the process of design rather than doing it. That makes any sense? So more like how we kind of go about the double diamond or like the design thinking process and how that is applied to business. And I think exactly what you said about this, like, design ops lead role is probably something that suits someone that might not be very into the craft or maybe is so far into their career that they're not that interested in the craft anymore, but they still are big believers in the process and how design works, that they're doing exactly that, like, evangelizing.
I think, like you both have mentioned, having someone who understands the value of design and is able to champion that is a huge win for designers in general. Yeah, I think I really like what you both said about having someone maybe in a senior position who really understands the value of design and who can continue to champion and almost like evangelize design within the organization. But I do think part of that as well might be our responsibility as designers. I think increasingly in a lot of environments, designers are being pushed to quantify and measure the tangible impact of their designs. And I think if in a design ops mindset, everyone almost has that responsibility or that awareness that measuring the impact of their designs is key, it actually almost becomes a reinforcing positive cycle. Because the more we can do that, the more, you know, stakeholders might see the value of design. And then it becomes easier to actually justify design ops processes.
I wonder that, now this is a very unshaped thought and that just came into my mind as you were saying that. I wonder if that kind of measurement role can almost be centralized into kind of like the DevOps lead part, where they, as they're leading the design team, they can, having a better, bigger picture of what each designer is doing, they can quantify that a little bit better from like a higher level and maybe take away the burden is not the right word, but like the work of quantifying what you're doing and letting designers just focus on the work rather than constantly thinking, how do I measure it? Is it, yeah, what's the impact of it and so on. I'm not saying that we shouldn't do that anyway, but maybe it takes so much out of our day-to-day that having someone as the design ops lead focusing on that can kind of allow the everyday designer to just focus on the craft and the impactful work they're doing.
I agree. I think I land somewhere in the middle where, like, agreeing with Yusin, I think, yeah, as designers, that's part of our role. But then, yeah, agreeing with you, Lavinia, like, it would be super nice to, like, at least if we can't, you know, give the primary responsibility to the design ops lead, just having like that ally, that person in your corner to back you up, to maybe suggest resources or structures, or even kind of give you the pointers, like that would just be lovely. And especially if there is that kind of role, the designers can see that the company believes in their designers because they've got someone whose role it is to support the designers, shape their outputs, give them that structure and, like, hopefully that consistency as well, and even to build that sense of community.
Yeah, and almost like centralized the impact a little bit, because sometimes as a designer, you can work on very small things like redesigning one page. And the impact of that might be very small if you isolate it, but you as a team redesigning kind of like a whole product can have a massive impact, but your page in isolation might not, but it is part of a bigger thing. And yeah, you can't necessarily quantify the impact of your individual work, but that design ops person can see it in context of the whole work and take away that burden of like constantly justifying what you're doing, if that makes sense. Because I'm all for like measuring our impact, but sometimes it can be a crutch for like, why are you here? Like justify why you're doing what you're doing. Mm. And that, yeah, that person seeing the bigger picture can just take away a little bit of that pressure.
No, I think I definitely agree with both of you. I don't think I'm fundamentally in disagreement. And I don't think it's our primary responsibility to, you know, be in charge of quantifying all these things, because at the end of the day, you normally work in a cross-functional team and you have the product manager or, you know, a project lead to really help track some of these metrics. But I think some awareness is probably quite useful, especially as I think people start to see designers as being more part of the strategic setup of the company rather than, you know, just kind of making pretty screens or whatever. I think it just helps to have some awareness of how this is done in general. But as you both say, I think it'd be amazing and ideal to work on this or have someone else kind of like oversee that in general. But then, you know, if we do like run small tests or experiments and say, you know, if you do like little user tests or a cognitive walkthrough and get people to do some tasks and you can actually prove that or use metrics to support why you've designed something in a certain way. I think like we mentioned in the articulating design decisions episodes, stakeholders often react so much more positively to that. And that, you 100%. Know, I think in their mind, like cements that what you're really bringing to the table is going to make them look good and, you know, ultimately brings value to the company.
100%, yeah.
So just to give people a bit of a lay of the land, there is a lot in the design ops landscape, and friends of the pod, not even friends of the pod, more like grandparents of the pod, the iconic NNG group, has of course made a lovely infographic that kind of allows us to see all the different areas that are encompassed within design ops. So we're going to go through them right now. So they're divided into three groups. So the first being how we work together, second, how we get work done, and third, how our work creates impact. So if we're to unpack the first one, which is one, how we work together, it's broken down into three sections. So we've got, in terms of organize, looking at kind of the organizational structures, the team compositions, and role definitions. So really understanding kind of where a designer sits in that. Then we have one of my favorites, which is collaborate. So shaping the rituals in meetings, the environment, the vibes, the communities of practice. And then we've got humanize, which is like the hiring and onboarding, the career development, really like that people-centric kind of operational side of things.
And once that's kind of like taken care of and understood, often design op teams and design op leaders have to think about how to get the work done. And this is in turn categorized in three other parts. So starting with kind of standardizing processes, so creating guiding principles, creating the design processes, making sure that we have a consistent tool set. So we talked a lot on the pod about like the wars between XD and Figma and Sketch, but like in a team, it's likely best if we all work with just one of them. And then there's obviously kind of like the harmonizing aspect of how we're getting our work done. And what we have here is things like design systems, which we all know and love, or research hubs where people come together and have all the right tools to ensure that they understand how users work and what they need. And then there's things like asset management, because nobody wants version 1.2.3.5400 and understanding if that's the right one or 1.5.300. And then the last pillar of how we're getting work done is prioritizing. So how do we balance the workflow of all the designers in the team? Do we have the right kind of information to estimate the work correctly? And do we know who to allocate the work to? And one thing that I kind of wanted to elaborate a little bit more on this kind of like how we get work done part is what I mentioned earlier in the pod, is kind of like the friction we have sometimes with agile processes that Dave Malouf was touching on. Reading that felt like I've always thought those things, but I've never put them into words. And you'll probably see that agile and scrum and those words are not really part of this how we get work done pillar. And that is because in the way he kind of describes it, modern agile tends to be about like solution engineering. But in design, we talk a lot about like understanding the problem first, and we're not very solution oriented, especially in the early stages. Or things like in modern agile, we focus a lot on getting the design right. But in our design ways of working, we focus a lot on creating the right design. As designers, we like to think a lot about imagining possible futures and how whatever we're doing is going to be almost like future-proof and maybe how we're going to expand in the future. Whilst modern agile is a lot about like risk mitigation and ensuring that whatever we're delivering now works. And it's not very future-oriented. Often, I think in teams, we all have this issue of like delivering an MVP and doing nothing with it afterwards, which as designers, we wouldn't want that to be kind of like the last step. We would want to iterate and imagine possible futures around it. So yeah, I thought that was really fascinating reading that, because I think as Lauren said as well, like often we're so kind of entrapped in the agile ways of working and how engineers work that we almost have no space to even think of how we would like to work. But yeah, that was a little bit about how we get work done, and I'll pass over to you, Sin.
Yeah, I love it. Thanks, Lavinia. The third branch in this diagram of design ops is around creating impact. So demonstrating and creating a wider organizational awareness of the impact that design has. And there are three pillars under this. So the first one is measure. Lavinia and I probably discussed this a little bit just now as well. So having design standards and being able to capture metrics on the value of your designs might be a couple of ways in which you measure the impact of your work. I think also being able to define good and having agreed definitions of what done constitutes. And then the second pillar is socialize. So in order to create a wider awareness of design work, a design ops team could look at socializing success stories or case studies. This is something that our practice actually within the consulting company tries to do a lot by communicating the value of design work we've done in the past. Also having lots of initiatives around reward and recognition, and essentially defining how design has been able to add value to the company. And the third pillar underneath this impact branch is around enabling. So equipping designers with the skills that they need to do their job through skills training, or coming up with playbooks that could draw on past examples and communicate how designers have worked on projects in the past. That's a really good way of learning from case studies and what other people have done in the organization. And just continuous education within the company on different types of design techniques. Education is around sharing knowledge and equipping designers constantly with knowledge of design processes that have been used in the past.
And speaking of a vast, fruitful and complex landscape, we have this week's Hotline Design Hotline caller.
Hey, Hotline Design Hotline. I'm Leah, a designer and a longtime listener and first-time caller. I work at a consultancy with a relatively new and disorganized design practice, and I was hoping to get your opinion on if design ops could help, and if so, how?
That is a really, really good question, especially since I think all of us only have experience within consultancies and agencies in terms of doing design, and all have like our own frustrations with maybe how things are done. For me, the best way to kind of sell it or introduce it maybe to people as something valuable to look into within an agency or a consultancy is the fact that our clients tend to pay quite a lot for our services, and with that come immense expectations. And like, one of the biggest expectations is speed. And I think figuring out how to introduce design ops into kind of our ways of working would allow us to work faster and with kind of less errors and less alignment, because design ops would introduce these really well-structured processes that would allow us to just work quicker. And yeah, I think that would allow us to meet those really high client expectations. But what is also really important, like, that's kind of like from an external perspective on how to sell that to clients. But I think there's also value in design ops internally, because I think a lot of people really struggle with attracting and retaining designers, especially recently. And design ops would kind of, especially like the first pillar that Lauren touched on how we work together, would allow companies to keep designers happy, I guess. I have a quote here from the same handbook that I've been talking about the whole episode that says, "Design isn't just a job that you show up to. Designers need to be developed, advanced, promoted, rewarded, and recognized." And to that, I would say hallelujah.
Amen.
Amen. And yeah, design ops would kind of allow companies to create processes for those things to actually be defined. Because currently, I think a lot of companies, especially when they have really low design maturity, they just kind of like bring a senior designer on and they're like, okay, do your work. But they don't have an answer to the question, okay, where will I be 2 years from now in this company? The likely answer will be like, the same place, probably doing the same thing. Which most designers would kind of like run for the mountains with that answer in mind. So yeah, hopefully those would be 2 points that you can bring to maybe senior stakeholders in your agency or consultancy to consider design ops.
Thanks for your question, Leah. I think that there is value in trying to apply a design ops-led way of working to things in your company at the moment, given that a lot of these processes aren't well-defined. The thing about design ops is that it's so broad. There are many different things that you can do within design ops to try and start optimizing some of these processes, and you don't have to do all of them at once. So I would say that one of the key things you can possibly consider is trying to map out how the team is currently working and see where you can find opportunities to add value, especially in terms of research and kind of speaking to users and uncover problems, and try and sell it as a way of, you know, by doing this, we're going to be able to build things that are so much more meaningful for the customer experience, rather than just focusing on immediate delivery, which is going to have gains in the long term. And possibly in an environment where design ops is not that well understood, I recommend almost maybe not starting with that term, because it might seem a bit intimidating to some people who don't really know about design ops. But what might be useful is just even compiling a few case studies from companies that have introduced design ops to some degree and kind of showing tangibly how it's benefited those companies. That might be one good way of trying to convince whoever you're working with the value of taking time out specifically to improve the processes for integrating design with the rest of the organization.
Awesome. Yeah, thank you so much for writing in, Leah. And I just kind of want to echo something that Lavinia said, which is that you can kind of pick and choose from the design op landscape. Like, there's a lot here. And I think especially if you're at a consultancy in this kind of new design team, I think you can really focus in on that kind of first step, which is one, how we work together. So how you organize and you collaborate and humanize kind of internally, because I realize sometimes it is hard depending on the client ask and the existing client structures to really affect change in the how they get work done. Like, they might have their own kind of tools. You might get a client laptop. They might have their own ways of working, which you can of course inform, but sometimes it is hard to inform like a lot of change there. And also like the measures, they might have specific measures laid out, but certainly, yeah, how you work together internally, I think, can really be shaped. So especially hiring and onboarding, career development, even how you organize and kind of sell your teams. We work with some agencies that have quite a rigid structure on how they sell out their people. They'll never do design teams of one. And they have kind of 3 to 4 people all specializing in different areas of the design process. So I would say definitely having a look at, one, how we work together, to again look at organize, collaborate, and humanize would be where I would start off in a new design squad. And Leah, thank you so much for calling in to Hotline Design Hotline. As always, if you have a question, you can send it to anchor.fm/hotlinedesignpod. You can find us at Hotline Design Pod on Instagram and hotlinedesignpod@gmail.com. Thank you so much for tuning in, and we'll catch you next week.
We're sorry. You have reached a number that has been disconnected. Please check the number and try your call again.